Blog Talk Radio.
On this day in 1933, FDR, newly elected president, Democratic Party, cousin of Teddy Roosevelt, former president, FDR gave his first of his fireside chats, and they're very relevant today because we may be facing a major banking crisis. Here is that fireside chat from Historical Archives, Carson Brazilla, Western Public Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
My friends, I want to talk for a few minutes with the people of the United States about banking. To talk with the comparatively few who understand the mechanics of banking, but more particularly with the overwhelming majority of you who use banks for the making of deposits and the drawing of checks. I want to tell you what has been done in the last few days and why it was done and what the next steps are going to be. I recognize that the many proclamations from state capitals and from Washington, the legislation, the treasury regulations, and so forth, couched for the most part in banking and legal terms, ought to be explained for the benefit of the average citizen. I owe this in particular because of the fortitude and the good temper with which everybody has accepted the inconvenience and the hardships of the banking holiday. And I know that when you understand what we in Washington have been about, I shall continue to have your cooperation as fully as I have had your sympathy and your help during the past week. First of all, let me state the simple fact that when you deposit money in a bank, the bank does not put the money into a safe deposit vault. It invests your money in many different forms of credit, in bonds, in commercial paper, in mortgages, and in many other kinds of loans. In other words, the bank puts your money to work to keep the wheels of industry and of agriculture turning round. A comparatively small part of the money that you put into the bank is kept in currency, an amount which in normal times is wholly sufficient to cover the cash needs of the average citizen. In other words, the total amount of all the currency in the country is only a comparatively small proportion of the total deposits in all the banks of the country. What then happened during the last few days of February and the first few days of March? Because of undermined confidence on the part of the public, there was a general rush by a large portion of our population to turn bank deposits into currency or gold. A rush so great that the soundest banks couldn't get enough currency to meet the demand. The reason for this was that on the spur of the moment, it was of course impossible to sell perfectly sound assets of a bank and convert them into cash except at panic prices far below their real value. By the afternoon of March 3rd, a week ago last Friday, scarcely a bank in the country was open to do business. Proclamations closing them in whole or in part had been issued by the governors in almost all of the states. It was then that I issued the proclamation providing for the national bank holiday. And this was the first step in the government's reconstruction of our financial and economic fabric. The second step, last Thursday, was the legislation promptly and patriotically passed by the Congress, confirming my proclamation and broadening my powers so that it became possible, in view of the requirement of time, to extend the holiday and lift the ban of that holiday gradually in the days to come. This law also gave authority to develop a program of rehabilitation of our banking facilities. And I want to tell our citizens in every part of the nation that the National Congress, Republicans and Democrats alike, showed by this action a devotion to public welfare and a realization of the emergency and the necessity for speed that it is difficult to match in all our history. The third stage has been the series of regulations permitting the banks to continue their functions to take care of the distribution of food and household necessities and the payment of payroll. This bank holiday, while resulting in many cases in great inconvenience, is affording us the opportunity to supply the currency necessary to meet the situation. Remember that no sound bank is a dollar worse off than it was when it closed its doors last week. Neither is any bank which may turn out not to be in a position for immediate opening. The new law allows the 12 Federal Reserve banks to issue additional currency on good assets, and thus the banks that reopen will be able to meet every legitimate call. The new currency is being sent out by the Bureau of Engraving and Printing in large volume to every part of the country. It is sound currency because it is backed by actual good assets. Another question that you will ask is this: why are all the banks not to be reopened at the same time? The answer is simple, and I know you will understand it. Your government does not intend that the history of the past few years shall be repeated. We do not want and will not have another epidemic of bank failures. As a result, we start tomorrow, Monday, with the opening of banks in the 12 Federal Reserve bank cities. Those banks which on first examination by the Treasury have already been found to be all right. That will be followed on Tuesday by the resumption of all other functions by banks already found to be sound in cities where there are recognized clearing houses. That means about 250 cities of the United States. In other words, we're moving as fast as the mechanics of the situation will allow us. On Wednesday and succeeding days, banks in smaller places all through the country will resume business, subject, of course, to the government's physical ability to complete its survey. It is necessary that the reopening of banks be extended over a period in order to permit the banks to make applications for the necessary loans, to obtain currency needed to meet their requirements, and to enable the government to make common sense checkups. Please let me make it clear to you that if your bank does not open the first day, you are by no means justified in believing that it will not open. A bank that opens on one of the subsequent days is in exactly the same status as the bank that opens tomorrow. I know that many people are worrying about state banks that are not members of the Federal Reserve System. There is no occasion for that worry. these banks can and will receive assistance from member banks and from the Reconstruction Finance Corporation. And, of course, they are under the immediate control of the state banking authorities. These state banks are following the same course as the national banks, except that they get their licenses to resume business from the state authorities. And these authorities have been asked by the Secretary of the Treasury to permit their good banks to open up on the same schedule as the national banks. And so I am confident that the state banking departments will be as careful as the national government in the policy relating to the opening of banks and will follow the same broad theories. It is possible that when the banks resume, a very few people who have not recovered from their fear may again begin withdrawals. Let me make it clear to you that the banks will take care of all needs, except, of course, the hysterical demands of hoarders. And it is my belief that hoarding during the past week has become an exceedingly unfashionable pastime in every part of our nation. It needs no prophet to tell you that when the people find that they can get their money, that they can get it when they want it for all legitimate purposes, the phantom of fear will soon be laid. People will again be glad to have their money where it will be safely taken care of and where they can use it conveniently at any time. I can assure you, my friends, that it is safer to keep your money in a reopened bank than it is to keep it under the mattress. The success of our whole national program depends, of course, on the cooperation of the public, on its intelligent support, and its use of a reliable system. Remember that the essential accomplishment of the new
Okay, that's the end of that. Now,
ladies and gentlemen.
Now, on this day, some interesting birthdays. We'll probably play this later in the week. The guy who wrote Rule Britannia, Thomas Arne, his birthday, Brit. Jane Delano, who may... Now, Delano is the middle name of Franklin D. Delano Roosevelt. I wonder if she's related. This woman helped or found the Red Cross. We usually credit Clara Barton. Great Italian patriot and writer Gabriel D'Annunzio, born on this day. Nijinsky, the great male ballet dancer who later he was involved with I forgot his name, Djaljov, the great ballet impresario who was gay. Nijinsky went insane, and he lasted a long time in an insane asylum. His wife died recently, I think in the last 10, 15 years. Today is also the birthday of Jack Kuriak, and I think we can, I have it here, a little bit of his talking about On the Road. It's right here. We're going to bring it up. Jack. I don't know what that is all about. I'm sorry, folks, he's on a phone. Sorry, folks, we had an interruption here. Here's Jack Curry at Birthday Memorial. Nope, no problem, yeah.
There was a little alley in San Francisco, back of the Southern Pacific Station at 3rd and Townsend. In red brick of drowsy, lazy afternoons with everybody at work and offices, in the air you feel the impending rush of their commuter frenzy. As soon they'll be charging en masse for market and Sansom buildings on foot and in buses and all well-dressed through working man Frisco of walk-up truck drivers. And even the poor grime bemarked Third Street of lost bums, even Negroes so hopeless and long left east and meanings of responsibility and try. That now all they do is stand there spitting in the broken glass, sometimes 50 in one afternoon against one wall at 3rd and Howard. Here's all these Milbrae and San Carlos neat necktied producers and commuters of America and steel civilization rushing by with San Francisco Chronicles and green call bulletins, not even enough time to be disdainful. They've got to catch 130, 132, 134, 136, all the way up to 146, till the time of evening supper in homes of the railroad earth, when high in the sky the magic stars ride above the following hotshot freight trains. It's all in California. It's all at sea. I swim out of it in afternoons of sun-hot meditation in my jeans with head on handkerchief on brakeman's lantern or, if not working, on book. I look up at blue sky of perfect lost purity and feel the warp of wood of old America beneath me. And I have insane conversations with Negroes in second-story windows above, and everything is pouring in. The switching moves of boxcars in that little alley, which is so much like the alleys of Lowell, and I hear far off in the sense of coming night that engine calling our mountains. But it was that beautiful cut of clouds I could always see above the little SP alley, puffs floating by from Oakland, or the gate of Marin to the north, or San Jose south. The clarity of Cal, break your heart. It was the fantastic drowse and drum hum of lum mum afternoon, nothing to do. Old Frisco with end of land sadness. The people. The alley full of trucks and cars of businesses nearabouts. Nobody knew or far from cared who I was all my life, 3,500 miles from birth, all opened up and at last belonged to me in great America. Now it's night in 3rd Street. The keen little neons and also yellow bulb lights of impossible to believe flops. The dark ruined shadows moving back of torn yellow shades like a degenerate China with no money. The cats in Annie's alley. The flop comes on, moans, rolls. The street is loaded with darkness. Blue sky above with stars hanging high over old hotel roofs and blowers of hotels moaning out dusts of interior. The grime inside the word in mouths falling out tooth by tooth. The reading rooms tick-tock big clock with creak chair and slant boards and old faces looking up over rimless spectacles bought in some West Virginia or Florida or Liverpool, England pawn shop long before I was born. And across rains, they've come to the end of the land sadness, end of the world gladness. All your San Francisco will have to fall eventually and burn again. But I'm walking, and one night, a bum fell into the hole of the construction job where they're tearing a sewer by day. The husky Pacific and Electric youths in torn jeans who work there, often I think of going up to some of them, like, say, blonde ones with wild hair and torn shirts, and they say, you ought to apply for the railroad. It's much easier work. You don't stand around the street all day, and you get much more pay. But this bum fell in the hole. You saw his foot stick out. British MG, also driven by some eccentric, once backed into that hole. As I came home from a long Saturday afternoon local, the Hollister, out of San Jose, miles away across verdurous fields of prune and juice joy, here's this British MG backed and legs up, wheels up into a pit, and bums and cops standing right outside the coffee shop. It was the way they fenced it, but he never had the nerve to do it due to the fact that he had no money and nowhere to go, and oh, his father was dead, and oh, his mother was dead, and oh, his sister was dead, and oh, his whereabout was dead. But and then at that time also, I used to lay in my room on long Saturday afternoons listening to Jumpin' George with my fifth toquet, no tea, and just under the sheets laughed to hear the crazy music. Mama, he treats your daughter mean. Mama, Papa, don't you come in here, I'll kill you, etc. Getting high by myself in room glooms, and all wondrous knowing about the Negro, the essential American, out there, always finding his solace, his meaning, in the fellaheen street, and not an abstract morality. And even when he has a church, you see the pastor out front bowing to the ladies on the make. You hear his great vibrant voice on the Sunday afternoon sidewalk, full of sexual vibratos, saying, why, yes, ma'am, but the gospel do say that man was born of woman's womb. No, and so, by that time I come crawling out of my warm sack and hit the street. When I see the railroad ain't going to call me till 5 a.m. Sunday morning, probably, for a local out of Bay Shore. In fact, always for a local out of Bay Shore. And I go to the whale bar of all the wild bars in the world, the one and only Third and Howard. And there I go in and drink with the madmen, and if I get drunk, I get. The girl who come up to me in there one night, I was there with Al Buckle, said to me, "You want to play with me tonight, Jim?" And I didn't think I had enough money. And I told this to Charlie Lowe, and he laughed, said, "How do you know she wanted money? Always take the chance that she might be out just for love, or just out for love. You know what I mean. Don't be a sucker." She was a good-looking doll. She said, "How would you like to ooyaku with me, mon?" And I stood there like a jerk. In fact, bought drink, got drink drunk that night, and in the 299 Club, I was hit by the proprietor, the band breaking up the fight, before I had a chance to decide to hit him back, which I didn't want to do anyway. Not on the street. I tried to rush back in, but they had locked the door and were looking at me through the forbidden glass in the door with faces like undersea. I should have played with her shoo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-ka-dookie.
That is Jack Kuriak's birthday memorial. Among other birthdays today, we have other famous people. Mieczysław Rostropowicz, the great, one of the greatest cellists who ever lived, and was a conductor who was married to Galina Vishnevskaya, a very great Russian soprano. And Mieczysław used to always say "Slava," and he liked vodka and women. Edward Albee. Controversial writer, wrote "Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf." As Paul Kantner of the Jefferson Airplane, I remember him from the Haight-Ashbury. And Liza Minnelli, the daughter of Vincent Minnelli and Judy Garland. Judy Garland's name was anglicized. She was from Michigan and had a German name. One of the mouthpieces of the mob, who later ratted on the mob, so they think, Salvatore Bull Gravano. He was born on this day. Among the deaths today, the notorious Borgia family, Cesare Borgia, died at age 31. And, of course, the Borgia popes were just outrageous. And there were two series, one on BBC and one from a Canadian-Italian production. We have one of them in our archives. And they're quite graphic, I could say that. John Bull, who supposedly was the composer of God Save the Queen. We have John Peter Elkhold, one of the great senators and great men and immigrants. He was a German immigrant to America. He became governor of Illinois. There's a street named after him. He could never be president, but he was one of the really true progressive, not these closet commies that we see today. Inventor of, the air pump, and also had an electric company, George Westinghouse's birthday is today. Excuse me. We had he died on this day. Sun Yat-sen, the founder of modern China, not Chiang Kai-shek. Sun Yat-sen didn't live that long. I think he died in 1925. Ivar Kruger, who was the match king who committed suicide. We have Charlie Bird, the saxophonist who had a major drug problem. They called him the Bird. And Maurice Evans, who was a great actor, who starred as Macbeth. It's a great one to see. A great film also to see. Among the events today, one of the fine universities of the Middle Ages, University of Vienna, was founded in 1365. A controversial founder of the Jesuit order was a soldier who later got Jesus, Ignatius of Loyola, Spanish. And, of course, the Jesuits control most of the Catholic colleges here in America. USF, University of San Francisco, I think Creighton up in Omaha. We have Loyola of Chicago and Fordham and Georgetown. Probably the most interesting modern son of a former soldier and son of John Foster Dulles. His son, John Foster Dulles, was, a Presbyterian, but his son became a Roman Catholic, later became a Jesuit priest, and later became a cardinal. We have the founder, the first European in New Zealand, Abel Tasman, and Tasmanian Sea was named after him. We have the founder of modern, what has become modern Chicago, or Chicago, a black French-Canadian lineage, Jean-Baptiste du Sable. There's a school, high school named Institut du Sable. And of course, the name Chicago is a Menominee Indian word, which means land of the steaking onion. And supposedly, when the Indians first came there, they said, Chicago is the onions. This is a stinky onion. That's the rumor. In 1789, the U.S. Post Office was set up. In 1884, Mississippi, of all places, set up the first women's college. And the first parachute jump from an airplane was a guy named Captain Albert Berry. Among the events today, other events, the founder of the Girl Scouts, Juliet Gordon Lowe. Now, I understand the Girl Scouts have also been infiltrated by, allegedly, a lesbian agenda. In 1913, I didn't get there when I was a correspondent in Australia, Canberra was set up as the Australian capital. This is interesting. I'll have to get into this more. In 1916, during the World War One, a French airship apparently sunk a British submarine labeled D-3. Also in that year, 1917, the moderates and conservatives in Russia, after the fall of the Tsar, or abdication of the Tsar, set up the Duma, or the Dumas, and then the workers, the communists, Lenin and Trotsky and that crowd, set up the workers' Soviet, which became triumphant and forced Alexander Kerensky and all of those people out of Russia. In 1919, an Austrian a reactionary group wanted Anschluss, or integration into Germany. This later came about in 1938 when Hitler German Wehrmacht march in and assassinate Chancellor Dollfuss. And also in this period, Mahatma Gandhi marched 200 miles to protest the British salt tax. What happened was the British had this racket going in India called you couldn't buy salt, you couldn't make your own salt from the sea, you had to buy it from the British, and there was a heavy tax on it. I did interview Gandhi's nephew, great-nephew, and we'll play that another day. And then again, 1938, Germany invaded Austria and integrated it into Nazi Germany. And, of course, the Austrians say, we are Germans. And I've had several Austrians say to me, or Germans say to me, we were Nazis, but the Austrians still are. And our most famous or infamous Austrian is Schwarzenegger, turned out to be a lousy governor of California. And they wanted to change the Constitution to allow foreigners, i.e. Schwarzenegger, to run for president. But the word is, you have to be native-born. And then we have New York State was the first state to prohibit race and creed discrimination in employment. And in 1947, Harry Truman announced his Truman Document, Truman Doctrine to fight communism. And then in 1964, Hoffa of the Teamsters Union was sentenced to 8 years in prison. And in 1994, the Church of England ordained the first of 33 women priests, and that didn't go down too well. This applies to Mr. Rowe. He's always making excuses, and this is the saying for today. He who's good for making excuses is seldom good for anything else. Now, among the political fiction, and people are getting tired of it, Obama was not the first president of Negro, Black, and African ancestry. It was Warren G. Harding. And then another federal building should not be named for Elliot Ness because he was a flake and he really didn't contribute to the conviction of Al Capone. It was Judge John Wilkinson and the accountant Elmer Erie. And then now there's more and more people realizing that these insurance claim handlers who use these IME, so-called independent medical examiners or medical whores. We will be celebrating St. Patrick's Day, so look forward to that. We might do it Friday or Saturday. And we'll end with our usual politics and poker.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Okay, Tony, what are you going to do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too.
Hit me with a kick.
Ready?
Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear.
We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year.
Big Ace.
Ace Betts.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where do you stand?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Here goes.
Possible straight, possible flush, nothing.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How's about we should make Jack Riley the guy?
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
I say neither one, I never even met him.
I say when you got a pair of Jack, bat out.
Politics and polka, politics and polka, shuffle up the cards and find the joker. Need a game for children, need the game is rough. Decisions, decisions, like
who to pick,
how to play, what to bet,
where to call up the...
All right now, fellas, politics or poker, which is more important?
Paraphrase.
That's usually the phrase. We should be back Friday. This is Peter Paul Verzola. Go to our subsidiary channel, the Fun Channel, Amicus Veritas, Poopery, AmicusVeritasPoutPourri. This is Peter Paul. Good night, and stay safe, and eventually there's going to be spring weather, even back east. Good night. Stay safe.